This is a sermon preached from Athens for the fourth Sunday of Lent, 2021, April the 11th. The readings are Ephesians 2, 1 to 10, and John 3, verses 14 to 21. In the year 1894, Rudyard Kipling introduced us to Baloo the bear. In fact, he introduced us to Baloo because Baloo the bear, rather like koala bear, is tautologous. Baloo is the Hindi word for bear. Baloo is one of the central characters of Kipling's Jungle Book, whose chief responsibility is the man-cub Mowgli. Walt Disney created one of his cartoon masterpieces when, in 1967, he introduced this Kipling story to a far wider audience of both children and adults. It's not only the original story that is so gripping, but Disney employed some very talented songwriters, and the songs from that film are memorable, enduring, and highly repeatable. Once before I've used a song from the film, but that time it was the one sung by the wily serpent with hypnotic eyes, Ka the snake. Baloo's song is one of the most favourite, Look for the Bear Necessities, a play on the two spellings in English of the word bear and bear. The simple bear necessities, forget about your trouble and your strife. The song continues, so just try and relax, yeah, cool it, fall apart in my backyard. 'Cause let me tell you something, little britches, if you act like a bee acts, you're working too hard. And don't spend your time looking around for something you want that can't be found. When you find out you can live without it and go along not thinking about it, I'll tell you something true. The bare necessities of life will come to you. Baloo is the master of doing nothing that doesn't have to be done, so he will find his little charge, Mowgli, a bit of a challenge. We hear often nowadays that such and such, or so and so, is cool. Just cool out, we're told. Relax. Chill. Or that great connection of the two. Chillax. This holy season of Lent is a time, in some senses, when Christians are asked to chill out, to relax. As we seek to emulate in these weeks of preparation for Easter, something of what is really the eremitical experience, the desert experience. The irony is that in these weeks of the desert, we so often fill our lives with yet more piety, taking on a regime of additional prayer or Bible study, or reading a book that's appropriate for the season. Every year a Lent book will be recommended by the Archbishop of Canterbury. Oh, we must quickly go and get that and read it. And whether we enjoy it or not, whether it leaves us stone cold or not, we force ourselves to read it. We learn more about endurance from forcing ourselves to read something than from the much praised words of the author in the recommended Lent book. Lent is a good time, not so much to take on more for 40 days, but to assess what our lives are really like. Let alone the inner journey we may make, a pilgrimage into self-introspection, it can be a time to evaluate the balance of life and faith. We might well ask, what is our main motive for faith? How do we perceive God? How do we assess what our relationship is with God? For many, the response is to get stuck into more work for the kingdom, to do more good for people, or maybe to get to church more often, or to pray more, to give more money to help the church. A congregation might decide to have more committees, meetings, so that it can get more done and much more efficiently. All these things might be well and good, but always there is that question, why? The model of Baloo the bear, sorry, just Baloo, is the complete opposite to that. To many Christians, we might say, If you act like the bee acts, you're working too hard. In all my years as a priest, I've encountered two kinds of colleagues: those who worked themselves into an early grave, and those who needed a bit more exploration into the meaning of the word work. St. Paul uses this word work, ergon in Greek, but in its plural form in the letter to the church in Ephesus. Like many of us, the Holy Apostle is seeking a theological resolution between his new discovery about God in Jesus Christ and the model of religion that had shaped his life. It had been the adherence to the law and the works of the law that had been the outward and legitimate signs of his faith. But his experience on the road to Emmaus, whatever that was, had been something for Paul of a liberation. He now understood words like grace and gift. This contrasts to works that win God's favour somehow. If I do this, I will be making God happy, sort of approach. Or worse still, by doing this, I will win my place in heaven. I think this dilemma rests with all of us. Human life is so deeply transactional at every level that to understand grace is not such a natural condition for us. If you do this for me, I will do that for you. This is our norm. The church at the time of Pelagius, which he lived in AD 354 to 418, had to address this very issue. Pelagius argued that it was by human activity that we gained our merit in God's sight, and that grace had only a limited influence on our personal salvation. It may not be surprising to know that he was born, most likely in the British Isles, in Wales in fact, where his better known surname would have been Morgan, which means in Welsh the sea, and his name in Greek, Pelagios, means of the sea. So with his origins in Wales, Mr. Morgan typifies that rather distinctive British characteristic of God is a British gentleman, and so long as you pull your socks up, you will be okay with God. This basically is transactional. What St. Paul discovers is that this is not the divine formula. He says to the Ephesians in chapter 2, verse 9, "By grace you have been saved." And a few sentences later, "It is the gift of God, not the results of work." One of the Reformation fathers, Martin Luther, took exception to the letter of St. James in the New Testament because of its focus on works. In medieval Western Europe, it was the institution of the church made so rich and powerful by demanding that people had to do works to gain divine favour and get into heaven, that had made medieval Catholicism so unpalatable to the Reformation movement. Yet, on reading it, James's letter is balanced. Faith accompanied by grace and works are colleagues, not enemies. We have to find a balance between God's grace, freely given, and the work to which we are called for the sake of the kingdom. We can't be Baloo-type Christians, nor can we somehow buy our way into heaven by doing or by giving. But we do have to strive, because we know we have to strive to overcome the natural transactionalism of our lives. We do have to work for the kingdom, because it is a Christ-like sign in our world to care for, as the New Testament says, the widows and the orphans. We also know that there can be no creative faith to be discovered through slothfulness. On this fourth Sunday in Lent, which we share this year with the Greek Church, our Orthodox sisters and brothers always focus on St. John Climacus, or St. John of the Ladder. A 7th century monk from the monastery of St. Catherine at Mount Sinai, St. John teaches about the 30 stages by which Christians can reach some sort of apex of moral perfection. His pattern of piety requires a deep degree of discipline, perhaps a step too far, or even 29 steps too far for many of us. Yet, any manual that assists us as Christians to find ways into discovering God's grace are not to be dismissed lightly, even though spiritual exercises may seem a bit like pulling your socks up. At the Orthodox Saturday evening service the night before Lent 4, these words would be used. Glorious Father John, you purified your soul with the streams of your tears. By your vigils through the night you have obtained God's favour and have been raised. Blessed are you to his love and beauty, in which you now rightly take delight, ever rejoicing, devout and holy Father, with all your fellow athletes for Christ. So we have this constant living and necessary relationship between God's grace and our striving, our good works. The final word goes to Christ, of course. In this morning's Holy Gospel reading from John, Jesus says in John 3:21, "Those who do what is true come to the light, so that it may be clearly seen that their deeds, erga, have been done in God." By the way, this might be the first sermon you have ever heard that mentions both St. John Climacus and a bear called Baloo. Remember that, if nothing else. Mm-hmm.